Yo, what up? 101.1 of the Answer, Doc Washburn Show. We're live. Today is the anniversary of the day that the president of Fox News called Tucker Carlson and basically said, see ya, you're out of here. And today I found for the first time the monologue that Tucker had already sent to his producers. He had already emailed the monologue on that Monday morning, what he was going to say that evening. And so I got that coming up here in a minute, but I got some breaking news. You probably haven't heard this anywhere else. From Tom Rogan over to Washington Examiner, Secret Service agent assigned to Kamala Harris detail involved in fight with other Secret Service agents. I'm like, say what? See, I was under the impression the Secret Service is supposed to work together as a team. They weren't supposed to get involved in physical violence with each other. If need be, and you hope you don't have to do this, but if need be, you'll take a bullet for whoever you're trying to protect, like those agents when the guy shot President Reagan, right? But you're not supposed to get involved in fisticuffs with each other. So what in the world? Exclusive from Tom Rogan over Washington Examiner earlier this afternoon, an armed U.S. Secret Service agent assigned to Vice President Kamala Harris's protective detail fought unarmed with other detail agents Monday morning. The incident occurred at the Washington, D.C. area Andrews Air Force Base before Harris arrived and after the agent suffered what the Secret Service has characterized as a medical incident. Okay, wait. Let me make sure I understand something. Secret Service agent gets into a physical altercation with other Secret Service agents after what the Secret Service has characterized as a medical incident. Now, how loosely do we want to take that definition of a medical incident? Was Buddy hallucinating on psychotropic drugs? Homeboy take too many shrooms? I mean, what exactly kind of medical incident would he have that would give him an incentive to go, my fellow Secret Service agents are bad guys, I must start pounding them with my fists? Look, I have a confession to make. Doc is just a nickname. I'm not actually a doctor. I don't even play one on TV. But I'm trying to wrap my head around this one. he started hitting his fellow Secret Service agents after he had a medical incident. Sure. Well, low blood sugar? I mean, he needed maybe a Nestle's Crunch and Cherry Pepsi? Would that have forestalled the violence? I don't know, Holmes. I can't call it, bro. Washington Examiner is aware of the agent's name and specific detail responsibilities, but is withholding those details for privacy reasons. Excuse me? Whose privacy? If he initiated fisticuffs with fellow agents, I think we need to make Homeboy famous, don't you? The Washington Examiner understands that the agent became aggressive with other agents. When the special agent in charge and a detail shift supervisor attempted to calm the agent, a physical altercation ensued. The agent was handcuffed before being withdrawn from service for medical assessment. Yeah, give him a taste of his own medicine. Wonder how many perps this guy is handcuffed. Harris, that's Kamala to you, was scheduled to arrive at Andrews Air Force Base after the incident. Not even gonna lie, fam. This is jacked up, man. And you know what we do here. So you probably know what I'm finna say. I don't think we're getting the full story. Do you agree? If so, you just nod your head. I don't think we're getting the full story. Now, Tom Rogan over there at Washington Examiner, am I following this guy, the guy that broke the story? Yeah, of course. National security and foreign policy, that's what he covers over at Washington Examiner. So, anyway, this is some crazy stuff, you know? So, but there's more. So next you've got Susan Crabtree, who is a reporter over at Real Clear Politics. She covers the White House, and she's also the national political correspondent over Real Clear Politics. And so she follows up on Tom Rogan's story, and she says, breaking, sources within the Secret Service community tell me the agent assigned to VP Kamala Harris was armed during the fight, that the gun was secured in the agent's holster until other agents physically restrained the agent and took the gun from the agent's possession. I'm also, look out now. This is going to make some folks pretty hot. I'm also told there are DEI concerns. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's another name for affirmative action. I'm also told there are DEI concerns among the U.S. Secret Service community about the hiring of this particular agent. Other agents and officers within the U.S. Secret Service community are asking questions about the agent's hiring process, whether the Secret Service did enough to look into the agent's background and monitor the agent's mental well-being, because there have been widespread concerns about other strange behavior before this incident. For now, I am also withholding the agent's name. Now, y'all know what diversity, equity, and inclusion means? That's this deal that so many different corporations are signing on to, like, we don't have enough people of this ethnicity. We got some, but we don't have enough. So we're going to lower our standards and just hire people who aren't qualified to do this job. And of course, the feds are all about it. Know what I'm saying? And the problem is, when you start dealing with the Secret Service, well, it's kind of like when you're dealing with the air traffic controllers. Don't you want people who are competent and know what they're doing regardless of what they look like? Now, I'm going to tell you something. Speaking of which, I was having a business lunch in Cabot, Arkansas, in February of last year. Right around lunchtime, there was a huge storm coming through central Arkansas, and the power went out. The lights went off, the power went out, this big restaurant we're eating in Cabot. And later, I found out about the plane crash just less than a quarter of a mile from Little Rock Airport. And it was like four or five people from a big company in North Little Rock who were headed to, it was an environmental cleanup company. I can't remember the name. They're headed to Ohio, I think East Palestine, unless it was a different chemical cleanup. But the Weather Service had issued serious, serious thunderstorm warning for this period of time right around lunchtime time for Pulaski County and probably adjacent counties. And somebody in the air traffic control tower told the plane, hey, you're good to go. And a wind shear took them right down and killed all of them. And I have always wondered, ever since February of last year, if that particular air traffic controller was a DEI hire. Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, we'll never get a chance to question the executive director of the airport for unrelated reasons, but that's a whole different show. If you missed my interview with attorney Bud Cummins Tuesday evening, who's representing the family of Brian Malinowski, the executive director of Little Rock Airport, who I believe was subject to a mob hit and was murdered by the ATF. Just go to docwashroom.com, and people tell me it's a really good interview. I believe it's a really good interview because Bud Cummins knows how to answer questions, and he's a great lawyer. But anyway, let me get back to this. So, Susan Crabtree, White House and national political correspondent for The Hill, Roll Call, Washington Examiner. She's been at all of them. Now she's at Real Clear Politics. She continues. She says, other details. Sources say the Secret Service agent in question was acting erratically upon showing up for a traveling shift at Joint Base Andrews, you know, Andrews Air Force Base. The agent in question ended up tackling the senior agent in charge of the vice presidential protective detail, got on top of him, and started punching him. At this point, I'm told, the agent who was attacking the senior agent in charge did indeed have a gun, but it was in the holster. Y'all, I'm sorry, the special agent in charge, SAIC is special agent in charge. Other agents are expressing relief that the agent did not shoot the special agent in charge. See, nobody's talking about this. Know what I'm saying? Nobody is talking about this. And people are commenting, saying things like, he'll probably get a promotion, just like Michael Byrd, the guy that shot and killed Ashley Babbitt on January 6th. Yeah, nothing's going to come of this. But I would be remiss in my duty if I didn't share with you stuff that's going on that you're probably not going to hear anywhere else. So that's what I try to do. All right, now, we do have a lot more stuff to talk about, a lot of stories in the news, but not in the news. Stories that if you know where to look, you can find them, but the mainstream media and your local media in Arkansas are not going to share them with you. Okay? So, but I've been promising you I would give you the monologue that Tucker Carlson was planning to speak on his show on Monday night, April 24th, 2023, but he was taken off the air. Now, Chadwick Moore is the name of a guy who wrote the book Tucker. He had been spending a whole lot of time with Tucker and his family for months before Tucker was taken off the air at Fox News. And I think it was just probably 2 or 3 weeks after Tucker was taken off the air, Chad McMurray said, hey, pretty soon I'm going to release my book. And so I interviewed him. I did a video interview on my podcast, DocWashburn.com, and I think it went real well. I've been told it went real well. So Chad McMurray on Twitter today is reminding everybody, hey, it's the one-year anniversary, and in case you didn't know, here's the monologue that Tucker was prepared to read on his show that very evening. So Chad McMurray says, on the morning of April 24th, 2023, Tucker Carlson was up unusually early, for him at least. By 11 in the morning, when Fox News President Suzanne Scott called him on the phone, he had already filed his script for that night's monologue. The day happened to be the six-year anniversary of Fox moving Tucker's show into the prime 8 p.m. Eastern time slot, and so Tucker assumed Suzanne Scott was calling to congratulate him on the anniversary. Instead, she told him his show was being pulled from the air and provided no explanation. Now, let me tell you my memory of that. I was watching. It was so weird. Harris Faulkner was doing her mid-morning show on Fox News Channel. And somebody put a piece of paper in front of her with a statement. And it said that Tucker Carlson of Fox News Channel had agreed to part ways. So they made her lie. She didn't know it was a lie, I'm sure, because it was kind of a shock that they put that in front of her, and she had to be the one to announce that Tucker wasn't going to be on the Fox News Channel anymore. And she had, I'm sure she had no idea that Tucker hadn't agreed to anything. But those were the words. Fox News Channel and Tucker Carlson have agreed to part ways, and we appreciate all this hard work over the years, yada, yada, yada. So 8 days after Suzanne Scott called Tucker Carlson, told him his show was being pulled from the air, refused to give him an explanation for why, Tucker told his biographer, Chadwick Moore, and I quote, "Of course, the answer may just be that if enough people call for you to be canceled, ultimately you will be. The reaction was very bipartisan. The Pentagon celebrated when we got canceled. Republican leadership was pretty excited. Democrats were thrilled. I think if you don't have a really obvious team with power behind you, you get crushed. And that's probably what happened. But I don't know. There may be other reasons." Unquote. A year later, Fox News Channel still has refused to provide an official reason for removing Tucker Carlson from the air, both to Tucker and to Fox's stagnant viewership. Most assume, rightly, that it had to do with Tucker's political beliefs, which made him an enduring nuisance to the Washington establishment. Just yesterday, Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024, Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell did little to quell this belief. Immediately after Congress passed $60 billion in additional aid to Ukraine, McConnell attacked Carlson on C-SPAN saying, and I quote, "I think the demonization of Ukraine began by Tucker Carlson, who in my opinion ended up where he should have been all along, which is interviewing Vladimir Putin," unquote. In that final monologue, Tucker Carlson planned to tease the first part of a one-hour interview he had recently done with former U.S. Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund. In that interview, which the Fox News Channel owns and has refused to air, former Chief Stephen Sund revealed that federal law enforcement and Democrat members of Congress were aware of impending violence during the January 6 election integrity protests, but vetoed assistance to cops on the ground. More chilling and perhaps darkly ironic, Tucker planned to discuss members of the government lobbying to have his show taken off the air, and he also wanted to talk about Ukraine. So I'm going to read you the script for what that unaired monologue, which Tucker sent off to his producers before the call came in from Suzanne Scott, what the unaired monologue says. And by the way, whenever Tucker Carlson refers to a name, Sandy Cortez, he says that name because that is the name that Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez went by in college. In college, she called herself Sandy Cortez. When, as a bartender, she started running for Congress, she started calling herself Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So Tucker always liked to make fun of her by using the name that she used all through college, at Boston College, Sandy Cortez. Anyway, here is the full text. Tucker began saying, Sandy Cortez just did an interview with Jen Psaki in which she demands that authorities pull our show off the air. And then he plugged in a video clip. He says, members of Congress aren't allowed to talk like this. The Constitution of the United States prohibits it. American citizens have an inalienable right to critique and criticize their political leaders. Our politicians are not gods. They are instruments of the public's will. They serve the rest of us, not the other way around. For that obvious reason, politicians can never censor our speech or try to control what we think. That unchanging fact is the basis of our founding documents, of our political system, and of our personal freedoms. As a former government official who claims now to be a journalist, Jen Psaki should know this and defend America's foundational principle. She refuses. Instead, Psaki nods along like a fan as Sandy Cortez calls for law enforcement to shut down news programming. The White House Correspondents Association and various other self-described advocates of press freedom stay silent too. Apparently, they agree with Ocasio-Cortez, or they're too afraid to say otherwise. It's distressing to watch this. The last thing America needs is more public figures saying radical things. What if we came on the air five nights a week and called for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to be handcuffed and carted away because we don't like her political views? We could certainly do that. We never would because it would be terrible for our country. Extremism is self-perpetuating. The more you encourage, the more you get exponentially. We don't want that. We want to live in the United States we had a few years ago, where people who disagreed with one another were willing to debate directly using facts and reason and didn't call for their opponent's imprisonment. We'll do whatever we can to return to that standard, including giving Sandy Cortez airtime. She is welcome on this show anytime. We'll travel to meet her anywhere and give her the full hour. We'll be civil and rational and let those watching decide who's got a more appealing vision for America's future. We've asked her to come on the show many times. We'll continue to do that. But in the meantime, because the words of our leaders matter, let's consider the substance of what Sandy Cortez is saying. She's demanding that our show be canceled because the things we're saying are, quote, very clearly an incitement to violence, unquote. Is this true? Even accounting for the fact that people tend to hear what they want to hear, it is not true. It's a lie, as anyone who watches this show knows. We are opposed to violence, not just philosophically, but in practical terms. We're against violent crime, the strong oppressing the weak. We're against the horrors of late-term abortion and state-encouraged euthanasia. And above all, we're passionately opposed to the violent and pointless cruelty of the war in Ukraine, which the Biden administration could end at any moment, thus saving the lives of innocents, but is instead prolonging purely for ideological reasons. Those are the things we dislike the most, the acts of violence our leaders endorse. Ocasio-Cortez is one of those leaders. She supports every one of those indefensible things, from abortion in the ninth month of pregnancy to extending the carnage in Ukraine. Who honestly is on the side of violence? And where, we wonder, is Ocasio-Cortez on the question of Ray Epps? January 6th was a violent insurrection, they tell us. And on the basis of that claim, they turned the war on terror against America's own citizens. We believe it's a false characterization, as we've said many times. January 6th is not... Pardon me. January 6th was not an insurrection, which is why no one has been charged for that crime. No guns were brought into the Capitol. No plans to overthrow the government have ever been found. It was not an insurrection, but there was violence. A Capitol police officer called Michael Byrd executed Ashley Babbitt, an unarmed protester, and was praised for doing it by politicians in both parties. Outside the building, a riot broke out. Windows were smashed. Police were assaulted. We were offended by this on the day it happened, and we said so. We still are. We're against violence, whether it's in Chicago, Ferguson, downtown Kenosha, Wisconsin, or on the west steps of the Capitol building in Washington. The main question from January 6th is, how did the violence stop? Pardon me. The main question from January 6th is, how did the violence start? Nearly 2.5 years later, we still can't say with certainty, but there are clues in the contemporaneous videotape. The night before the riot, for example, a man named Ray Epps was caught on camera encouraging protesters to breach the Capitol. And there they play a video clip proving it. The next day, as the violence began, Ray Epps was filmed again doing the same thing. They play the video clip from the next day. Was that legal? We can't say. We do know that any fair person would define what Ray Epps said to the crowd on January 6th as inciting violence. Ray Epps encouraged those around him to break through a cordon of armed police officers and breach a federal building. What Epps told the crowd to do could only lead to physical conflict. By Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's standard, Ray Epps should be punished for inciting violence. But Epps hasn't been punished. Unlike more than 1,000 other Americans who were not caught on camera encouraging crimes, Ray Epps has never even been arrested. In fact, he's been rewarded generously by the left. Epps is currently being defended with great ferocity by neoliberal Democrats. His lawyer is a liberal activist who once worked for the Democrat Party as well as its primary law firm, Perkins Coie. He now works with Hillary Clinton confidant David Brock. And then they put the details up on the screen. Epps was even defended by the January 6th committee, despite the fact he's the only person we've seen on video encouraging a breach of the Capitol. And then details of former Congressman Adam Kinzinger and Ray Epps on the screen. Tucker continues, last night, Ray Epps appeared on the Democrat Party's biggest television show, 60 Minutes on CBS, to attack this show for asking questions about who he is and why he's never been arrested for what he did on January 6th. And they have a video clip from 60 Minutes. As we have so often with his new ally, Ocasio-Cortez, we've asked Ray Epps on this show many times. We'll continue to do that. But given its historical and present political significance, we wanted as many perspectives on January 6th as possible, so we spoke for more than an hour to the man who was in charge of security that day, the former head of the Capitol Police, Stephen Sund. And then they were going to play clips of Stephen Sund showing that Pelosi and the Pentagon and the FBI knew that violence was coming but did nothing to stop it. They kept Stephen Sund's fellow police officers, Capitol Police, from protecting themselves. They hid intel. They kept the National Guard from assisting. In other words, they encouraged violence. Tucker says, we also spoke to Stephen Sund about intel and FBI officers in the crowd. And a clip of Stephen Sund saying there are more undercover feds than he had ever seen at a demonstration. Tucker says, we spoke about Ray Epps to Stephen Sund. Another clip there. The clip where he says that half of the intel community is run by the Pentagon. Have you heard that anywhere? Tucker Carlson continues, the media also repeatedly... I was way off base there. Tucker Carlson did not continue at that point. That was all in the monologue that he had sent his producers to get ready for the evening of Wednesday, April 24th, before he got the call from Fox News Channel President Suzanne Scott saying, we're taking you off the air right now. You're not going to have a show tonight or ever again. See ya. Now, Tucker has perhaps gone on to bigger and better things. I don't know. He's done a lot of things on Twitter, which are pretty interesting. But some quite troubling, but that's a whole other show. We're not going to get into that tonight. What I am going to get into is which ones of your senators and representatives just voted to send Ukraine billions more. And why the decision to send them billions more is pointless. And we will get in as many stories as we can between now and the end of the hour that you're not going to hear anywhere else. Coming up straight ahead, as the Doc Washman Show continues, if you want to call in, the number to call is 501-823-0965. Here on 101.1 The Answer. I'll talk to you about integrity for a minute. When my former employer fired me in October 2021 because I wouldn't go along with their COVID vaccine mandate, I found out a lot about integrity. A buddy of mine contacted me and told me that Mitch Ward, the owner of Red River Auto, had asked him if it'd be all right if he gave Mitch my cell number. I said, well, sure. I'd never met Mitch Ward, never talked to him before. But, you know, I'd heard of him from the TV commercials. Anyway, next thing I knew, I was meeting with Mitch Ward, owner of Red River Dealerships in Cabot, Malvern, Heber Springs, Wynn, Arkansas, all over the place. And Mitch told me that not only did he want to advertise on my podcast at DocWashburn.com, but when he found out that my former employer had fired me for refusing to get the clot shot, he pulled all his advertising off all their stations. Wow. That got my attention. So he started advertising on my podcast, and a couple of months later when I was rear-ended on Colonel Glenn Road by a guy who didn't even tap his brakes and my car was all totaled, well, where do you think I was going to go to get my next car? That was easy. Red River. Matter of fact, ever since then, I've been getting all my service done there, too. Check them out at RedRiverAuto.com. Or better yet, go see them at their lot in Cabot. Tell them Doc Washburn sent you. They're good folks. Honest. Integrity. RedRiverAuto.com. Now, a few months ago, my wife and I found out that our daughter had lost so much weight that she was down to just 94 pounds. She got nauseous no matter what she tried to eat. Had to quit work because she got dizzy just trying to stand up. Her doctor told her, you have a hiatal hernia and there's nothing we can do about it, so go on home. So I told my wife, if we didn't try to help her, she's going to die. And we didn't want that to happen. So we took our daughter to see our friend, Dr. J.R. Crabtree, at the Arkansas Upper Cervical Center, and he did help her. And she stopped getting nauseous when she ate, and she started gaining weight, and she's back at work. And everybody's praising God for this. What Dr. Crabtree does, the best-kept secret in American healthcare, let me explain it to you. Your skull weighs somewhere between 8 and 15 pounds. It rests on the top bone of your spinal column, the atlas, which only weighs 2 ounces. If that atlas bone, that C1, gets out of alignment, your whole spinal column can get kinked up like a chain. When that happens, your central nervous system can't send out the signals to different parts of your body as God designed it to do. Dr. Crabtree takes x-rays of your head and neck to find out if your atlas is out of alignment. If it is, he gets it back in alignment, and he saved our daughter's life. To find out more, go to their website, TurnMyPowerOn.com. Last but not least, I am so proud to have Colonel Conrad Reynolds and AVII as a sponsor of the Doc Washburn Show. AVII is the America Voter Integrity Initiative. In Arkansas, we have a real problem, the way we vote. The touchscreen voting computers cannot be trusted. The cybersecurity experts and voting experts that Congress calls on all agree that we need hand-marked paper ballots that are filled out in person at the local precinct. The experts also agree that electronic tabulators cannot be blindly trusted to be accurate when counting out votes. They all agree that there must be a hand count audit of all races before an election is certified. Let me ask you something. Why have the citizens of Arkansas never been asked if they wanted to use voting computers? Did you know that a recent Rasmussen poll showed that nearly 60% of all Arkansans want hand-marked paper ballots? To find out more about what you can do, visit AVII.org. Colonel Conrad Reynolds and AVII are working hard to restore trust, transparency, accountability, and accuracy to Arkansas elections. Remember to visit AV as in Victor, AVII.org. What up, what up, what up, what up? 101.1 The Answer. Doc Washer Show continues. We're sending billions more to Ukraine. So, if I were to tell you, well, we got four U.S. representatives from Arkansas and two U.S. senators. All states have two U.S. senators. Different states have different numbers of U.S. representatives depending upon the population of the states. So, if I were to tell you, five of the six guys that we sent to Washington voted to give billions more to Ukraine, who would you guess? Who would you guess was the one that voted not to send billions more to Ukraine? Let's see a show of hands. And by the way, specifically, the bill provides appropriations to Department of Defense, Department of Energy, Science Programs, National Nuclear Security Administration, the Administration for Children and Families, Department of State, and the U.S. Agency for International Development. The funding is provided for purposes such as supporting current U.S. military operations in the region. We got U.S. military operations in Ukraine? Really? Did you know that? I didn't know that. Also, the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, replacing defense articles that were provided to Ukraine. What, they sell some on the black market? Don't look at me like that. Reimbursing DOD for defense services and training provided to Ukraine. The Foreign Military Financing Program. Economic support for Ukraine. Refugee and entrance assistance. International narcotics control and law enforcement and the development and production of isotopes. The bill also includes provisions that expand the authorities. Yeah, because we're only $33 trillion in debt. That's not nearly far enough down the hole, right? The bill also includes provisions that expand the authorities of the president to transfer defense articles and services from DOD to foreign countries or international organizations. Yeah, why should we have a stockpile of weapons? Let's give them all to Ukraine and let them sell them on the black market so we can be caught flat-footed whenever people try to hit us. I mean, that's the plan, right? Oh, I mean, it goes on and on. All right, so of course, both senators, Tom Cotton and John Bozeman, voted to send billions more to Ukraine. Of course, French Hill voted to send billions more to Ukraine. Of course, Steve Womack up in Northwest Arkansas voted to send billions more to Ukraine. I would have guessed Bruce Westerman, the guy who represents South Arkansas and a lot of Western Arkansas, would have been the guy to vote not to. But I would have been wrong. Bruce Westerman voted to send billions more to Ukraine. The guy that voted not to, Rick Crawford, who represents Eastern Arkansas. So now you know. But I told you that I was going to tell you how futile sending any money to Ukraine is at this point. The great independent journalist Brian Dean Wright over there on Twitter, and he just lays it out. As Washington, D.C. votes to send Ukraine billions more in war aid, let's talk about what they're not telling you. The war is lost. Here's what we know. corruption remains endemic in Ukraine. Consider this from Zelensky's office last winter. Time Magazine. Time Magazine. There's a quote from an article here, but when I made this point to a top presidential advisor in early October, he asked me to turn off my audio recorder so he could speak more freely. He says, Simon, you're mistaken. People are stealing like there's no tomorrow. Brian Dean Wright continues saying, but even if the war material doesn't get stolen or aid taken, there's a bigger problem. The U.S. weapons won't matter because there are too few Ukrainian troops to use them. The rural Ukrainian men have already been largely slaughtered, and urban men are hiding or have fled to Europe. Again, from Time Magazine last year, one of Zelensky's close aides tells me that even if the U.S. and its allies come through with all the weapons they have pledged, quote, we don't have the men to use them, unquote. Brian Dean Wright continues saying, the lack of Ukrainian manpower is the worst kept secret in the West. So let's say it again. There simply aren't enough bodies for the front lines. Our aid won't matter. It doesn't address the foundational problem of manpower. Again, this time not Time Magazine, but Politico. He's got the screenshot from the article in Politico. One of the top-ranking military sources told Politico, quoting now, there's nothing that can help Ukraine now because there are no serious technologies able to compensate Ukraine for the large mass of troops Russia is likely to hurl at us. We don't have those technologies, and the West doesn't have them as well in sufficient numbers. Brian Dean Wright continues, still not convinced? One of Ukraine's top generals admitted it 2 weeks ago. There's another quote from the commander of Ukraine's ground troops, Oleksandr Pavlyuk, in a Facebook post a couple of weeks ago, said, no matter how much help we get, how many weapons we have, we lack people. Brian Dean Wright, great independent journalist, continues, as leaders in D.C. and Brussels, of course, being the site of the European Parliament, Brussels, Belgium, as leaders in D.C. and Brussels try to ignore or bury the truth about Ukraine, it's still getting out. The people of Europe know. They watch this war daily. Here's their conclusion, and he's got a headline from the UK Sunday Times, only 10% of Europeans say Ukraine will win war. Subtitle, public divisions emerge over conflict as polling finds Kyiv is short of support. Kyiv being what we used to call Kiev, the capital of Ukraine. That's a byline by Bruno Waterfield in Brussels, UK Sunday Times. Brian D. Wright continues. That explains why pro-war Republicans, Democrats, and the White House fervently wave Ukraine flags and smear anyone who challenges them as pro-Putin. But that's actually the tell. Theater is all they have, and threats. But there's also this. The new argument is that Putin will march on Poland, the Baltics, and maybe Germany one day. Believe the intel, they say. Fine, show us. Shouldn't be a problem. Biden has been declassifying the stuff for years to fight Putin. Put up or shut up. He's got a screenshot from NBC News. Headline, in a break with the past, U.S. is using intel to fight an info war with Russia even when the intel isn't rock solid. Subhead, it doesn't have to be solid intelligence, one U.S. official said. It's more important to get out ahead of them, the Russians. Putin specifically, before they do something. Doesn't have to be solid. Yeah, kind of like when they went after Trump. Brian Dean Wright says, if they put up the intel, we must scrutinize it with great care. Remember when we did this last go-round? Trust the intel. Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Saddam is a bad guy. Trillions of dollars later, lots of people dead, spread of radical Islam, etc. And it was all based on the intel. Well, see, what he doesn't want to face there is the fact that Saddam had already used weapons of mass destruction on the Kurds. Couldn't use them if he didn't have them. And George W. Bush took so long putting together his coalition of nations, and there were trucks going from Iraq to Syria every day for months. And eventually we found out Syria had WMDs. But that's a whole other show. Brian Dean Wright says, to be clear, I don't know what Putin's plans are, but as a former CIA officer, I do know the Russians are a difficult adversary. Putin plays dirty. I also know the relationship can be handled and negotiated. Peace is tough, but it is possible, unless Biden doesn't want it. And he has headlines to that effect. And that's the real story here. Biden and company don't want peace in Ukraine. The goal is to use the country to degrade Russia. It is about regime change in Moscow. And the headline from March 26, 2022, CNN Politics, Biden says Putin cannot remain in power. Hey, thanks, Tom Cotton. Thanks, John Bozeman. Thanks, French Hill. Thanks, Bruce Westerman. Thanks, Steve Womack. I'm Doc Washburn. If you missed some of this and you want to hear it, docwashburn.com. It'll be up in a little bit. I'll see you tomorrow night, God willing, right here at 6.06 p.m. Central, 101.1, The Answer.